This is Agri Futures on Air, brought to you by Agri Futures Australia, driving innovation in Australian agriculture.
Hello and welcome to Agri Futures on Air. I'm Jane Cudahy. For many of us, ginger is one of those terrific flavour sensations that can lift the bar on everything from a cup of tea to an aromatic stir fry. All you need is to select a luscious looking specimen from your local market. However, unbeknown to the average consumer, growers have been battling a fungus deep below ground level that is a major threat to the Australian industry. Fusarium yellow rot is enemy number one to all Australian growers, and to make matters worse, not only is it common and hard to control, it can stop seed stock, also known as the rhizome, from germinating or at least stunt its growth. In another whammy, it can live for years in the soil. However, AgriFutures Australia is wrapping up work on their program Ginger Ninja, automating disease detection in seed ginger stock, and they've come up with a way to revolutionise the identification of the disease. The project piloted the development of an automated vision system for pest and disease management that is capable of robustly identifying signs of fusarium in seed ginger stock. But more on that later. First, let's get a good look at what's under the ground. Kylie Templeton and her family have been battling fusarium in their ginger farm in southeast Queensland since the 1940s. In a bad year, Kylie says that they can lose up to 30% of their crop. She's speaking here to Megan Woodward.
I suppose I was born into the ginger industry. My family have been growing ginger since the 1940s when my grandparents first started growing ginger. So, you know, I was pretty much on the ginger field in my nappies. When I came back to the business formally, I've learnt from the bottom up and learnt how to pick the ginger, pack the ginger.
From your perspective and the industry's perspective, a bit of background around the impact of fusarium on your operation over the years and all the sorts of things you have attempted to do to minimise or eliminate the risk of fusarium on your crops.
Fusarium's been in the industry pretty much forever, I suppose, something we've had to tackle along the way forever. So it's a rot disease and it rots your ginger crop out while it's sitting in the ground. So you can have bad years with fusarium, you can have better years. So if you're having a bad year, you could easily lose 30% of your crop from fusarium rot. The fusarium rot sort of attacks the ginger more around, we start seeing signs of it April, May, I suppose. So that's when the ginger is about 6 months old. So we do have 6 months of the ginger being free of fusarium. Fusarium sitting in the soil that we grow the ginger in, as well as it can be transferred from your seed product. So if you don't grow a clean seed piece of ginger, you're going to, if it's infected with fusarium, you're going to grow fusarium, of course. Mm-hmm. So our first step of trying to eliminate the fusarium disease is in our seed preparation. So when we're preparing our seed, for people who don't know how we prepare seed for ginger, the actual rhizome that you eat, we're growing very clean product of ginger to make sure it doesn't have disease in it. We cut that into seed size pieces. Ginger has eyes on it, just like a potato. People seem to refer to eyes with a potato. Ginger has the same, and those eyes then grow on. So when we're cutting the seed pieces, people are inspecting each piece of ginger, and it's a visual check currently that we're doing with our human eyes. And over the years, we've taught ourselves what are the signs of fusarium rot at its very early stages. Of course, when fusarium has infected the ginger badly, I suppose it's very easy to identify, but we're trying to identify it in its very early stages, which comes down to a colouring of the ginger. There's no real scientific test currently at the moment that tells us whether ginger is infected with fusarium or not. It's just experienced people that have worked with ginger that are using their human eye to do that. Other ways we've tried to eradicate the fusarium diseases with different fungicides. We would dip our seed ginger over the years. Yes, that sometimes it works to a degree. but it's not perfect. The other way that we're trying to eradicate the disease as much as we can is our biosecurity practices. So we don't want to transfer the disease from one farm to another, and that can be done through our equipment, crates, our machinery, tractors, harvesters, our people. We don't transfer people from farm to farm. So we have very strict biosecurity regulations on our farm as well.
It's a lot to stay on top of, and it sounds like you have to put an incredible amount of trust in the people that are looking and checking, which leads us into this Ginger Ninja project that was done in collaboration with Matthew Dunbabin. Tell me a little bit about the connection with the project and how you were involved.
Yeah, so Matthew came to our shed here to get some seed examples when we were cutting our ginger into seed pieces. That's when he came into the shed here, and we were teaching his camera what was a clean piece of seed ginger, clean from fusarium, and what was an infected piece of ginger. And we were teaching his camera, his algorithm, how to identify that. And that was taking samples. I think there was a few hundred samples that he took. Matthew wasn't told what was clean and what was unclean. And then the results came out in the end. So Matthew spent quite a few days up here. We were just working together. By the end of it, Matthew certainly learnt what was a clean piece of seed and what wasn't. So that was really interesting.
You had an extra set of eyes in the team.
And then the way that we clarified the whole study, I suppose, was, okay, so it was myself who was identifying whether the seed was clean of fusarium or not. So then Sharon from DAF took those examples, those seed pieces, and grew them out at the farm in Nambour there, and to confirm whether my human eye could identify the fusarium disease well enough. And unfortunately, the results weren't as good as what we were hoping. So what it taught us was the human eye can't see well enough to know whether it is actually infected with fusarium or not. You know, the percentages were good enough. We were finding at least over 50% of the ginger we could identify whether it was infected or not. But that was pretty much it. And we were hoping that we were actually doing better than that. So it was a bit of an unfortunate step back in our thoughts there, but it was certainly a good learning curve to know that fusarium is even harder than what we thought to identify in the ginger.
Absolutely. And I guess too, it really highlights the need for this sort of research to be able to support producers who are trying their utmost to stay on top of this. Tell me a bit about the research project, I guess, from the prototype that was on site, what you got out of that process.
Yeah, so it was really interesting, the prototype that Matthew made. Nice and simple mechanism. So it's a camera. You place the seed piece of ginger underneath the camera lens, and it would give you a red light to say, sorry, that's infected with fusarium, a green light to say that's a clean piece of ginger without fusarium. And it was pretty accurate. At that stage, Matthew had a little bit more fine-tuning to do. So what that would achieve is, of course, in my business here, I'm the quality controller for our seed preparation, not just relying on my eyes, my experienced eyes. This prototype, we could have it as a training tool for all our people, because we had about 20 people cutting our seed ginger for nearly up to 3 months full time. So they would have a training mechanism as well as a checking mechanism throughout that whole season of cutting the seed to identify whether the ginger is infected or not.
How much of an additional support is that to you, or potential additional support is that to your everyday operation?
It allows me to feel more comfortable that my people are being trained well and have a checking mechanism. So because we have such a large group of people, I would be able to have, you know, a couple more of myself to be able to get around and have a higher level of checking on that fusarium investigation for our workers. So it would be a huge help for our business to know that the people are doing as well as we possibly can to identify that fusarium infection.
You would have heard Kylie mention Matthew Dumbabin. To introduce him formally, Matthew is a professor of robotics at the Queensland University of Technology. Initially, he was creating robots that could monitor crown of thorns starfish that feed on coral, but realised the automated vision screening system was transferable for another pest species, fusarium. He's also speaking here with Megan Woodward.
I've actually had quite a varied career. I'm actually an aerospace engineer by training, but was never really interested in aircraft. I was interested in Formula One cars, but as the way it turned out, I ended up working in designing road trains for far north Queensland and Northern Territory before moving to the CSIRO, where I did a lot of mining robotics. But about 2005, I actually decided that I wanted to do robotics, and at the time, artificial intelligence was still quite new, for environmental monitoring in all aspects, whether it be for, you know, water quality, greenhouse gas, agriculture, that type of thing. So I started on a bit of a journey then to work in developing very powerful but purposeful tools for different types of environmental monitoring. But the problem that we had back then was, although we had really good algorithms, the state of the art, we could get about 60 or 70% detection accuracy, but it used to take 2 minutes per image. It was just unfeasible for implementation at scale. So we then fast forward. So we did work in that for quite a while, and we developed new types of tools for seagrass monitoring and so forth. But if we fast forward to 2014, there was actually a convergence of technology and biology that allowed us to revisit crown of thorns starfish. And the key things there was James Cook University developed a solution called Biosalts. So it was just an easier way of controlling the starfish. So we could do that robotically. But what was more important and actually related to this particular project is the sort of the emergence of deep learning. And that's an artificial intelligence approach that can do real-time image segmentation. The hardware was there. These new algorithms were there. That we can actually then do 99% detection accuracy of starfish at nearly 10 times a second on board the robot. So that's sort of the segue into why we thought, okay, what other applications do we have? We have not only these underwater situations, but we have agricultural pests, so weed control. So my the group here at QUT work on different types of detection algorithms for different types of weeds, and they can actually determine the weed in real time, but also then select if it's going to be mechanical weeding or if it's actually a chemical weeding. And depending on the weed, we can actually then customize which spray we actually use for each different weed. So you can do that in real time, which is quite fantastic.
That is an incredible link from the sea to soil, essentially. Yeah. This environmental robotics that you're using, that you have reapplied, tell me where the link to the ginger industry and this automating disease detection has come into play, specifically around seed ginger stock.
The link between the marine and the agriculture is actually not as diverse as you might think. What we're really interested in is taking these algorithms, these deep learning algorithms, where we train up these models to detect a certain thing and apply them to different domains. So initially we start off in crown of thorn starfish, but what is unique about the work that we do is we actually then try to do some sort of action in real time based on that. So in particular, the crown of thorn starfish, we're actually injecting them. But when we had a conversation with Shane Templeton from Templeton Ginger, we'd already been applying these algorithms in the weeding domain, so we could actually do mechanical tilling or automated spraying. But now we found out from Shane that there's actually a you know, a big problem with fusarium, which is a disease that can affect the ginger crops. But also when they do seed production, it's quite a manually intensive process. They have to, as the ginger's coming off the production line, humans would cut, inspect the ginger to try and determine if it has presence or absence of disease, and then mechanically cut up the ginger. And for us, that was a really exciting problem because we could now take what we know from artificial intelligence and deep learning, and with the prospect of being able to do real-time disease detection, but then ultimately where we want to go is actually that interaction with the ginger and actually cut it so that we can then streamline the process to make it more efficient on farm.
And yeah, that's the key point, isn't it? Efficiency. The actual identification and removal of disease seed stock is just such a highly labor-intensive process for growers. The cost around labor is significant. Was that the, I guess, from a grower's point of view, when you started having these discussions, was that the element that got them excited first, or was it the implementation of AI on farm?
I think underlying, it's always been about disease detection. Obviously, it's if you're going to make a lot of your soil in ungrowable, if you keep replanting Fusarium ginger, then that's actually not an optimal solution for you. So there's two aspects. One is, okay, let's try and mitigate even just using seed ginger that has Fusarium. But the other one is then, okay, if we can get into automated cutting as well, that is a big economic driver. And back when we started the project 18 months, 2 years ago now, you wouldn't have expected COVID to be such a problem. And now, it's sort of quite imperative maybe that we really need to start considering, okay, let's take this next step from disease detection to actually cutting the ginger, because if you don't have a labour force to do that, and obviously it's instantly produced ginger, then you really need to address that problem.
Tell me a little bit, I guess, to dig down, pardon the pun, a little further, but around the development of the actual prototype that's portable and configurable ginger scanning tool. What does that actually look like in real terms on farm?
Yeah, so maybe I'll step back and just tell you exactly what we've sort of developed as through the courses program, how we actually got to this prototype, if that's okay. So what we... When we created this project with Shane Templeton, what we wanted to do was we stage it, because it was obviously with research, there's a lot of risk that you don't know what the outcomes will be. Will AI actually be effective in detecting disease ginger? And then can we move to the next phases from detection to sorting to cutting? So the first phase, and this is what this particular project's about, is the automated detection. And the way this works is, we're using what we call deep convolutional neural networks. It's just artificial intelligence approach used commonly now for a lot of what we call segmentation problems or classification problems. So for us, we actually had to train our network to detect the presence or absence of Fusarium. And the way that we did that is we were lucky enough to be able to go up to Templeton Ginger in Yimundi and have experts actually sort ginger that we could then image. So we created this big chamber where we could image the ginger under controlled lighting, under different types of lighting, with fluorescence, with different types of cameras. I think we tried 7 different cameras to really nut out what is the human determining has been diseased or not diseased, and can we then translate that into an algorithm and possibly even do better than a human could do. Spent a lot of time up at Templeton Ginger. We got thousands of images of different types of disease, on 2 different varieties of ginger, and we created a set of deep neural network models that we evaluated. And what was interesting was that we actually did what we call a blind study. So the Department of Agriculture and Fisheries actually, in a controlled test, we had the expert grade some ginger. We imaged that, not knowing what they graded it as. And then the Department of Agriculture and Fisheries actually did a grow out assessment. They grew out the ginger for nearly a year to determine if it actually ended up having the disease or not. So that was sort of the key validation on our system, on our algorithms. And what was the interesting finding was that we, as an artificial intelligence system, we actually learnt the expert incredibly well, more than 80% accurately. And depending on the types of model, that actually even grew into the 90%. But what was actually interesting was that, and this sort of falls to some of the pitfalls of if you don't know what you're doing with artificial intelligence, where you can start getting misleading results. Because what was happening was from the grow-out assessment, we're actually getting a lot lower. So the expert was actually being more conservative. This is what the results show. So they would actually class the ginger as having disease when it actually didn't. And so our results against the grow-out didn't look great. But what the side of that was, we actually learned what the expert was doing. So we actually made our system conservative as well, just by design. Well, actually, essentially, that's how we developed the algorithm. So we presented a lot of different images to this. We were hoping that we're going to find some superhuman types of ways of detecting this disease. We were looking at combinations of not only like your cameras that you red, green, blue cameras that we typically associate with iPhones and all sorts of things like that, through to fluorescence, which makes sort of things under different lighting conditions, particularly UV, sparkle in these bright greens and other colours. Unfortunately, we couldn't find any correlation between that, but the RGB cameras, the standard cameras that we have, actually proved very well in replicating what a human could do. We had these models, and what are we going to do with those models? And what we have done is we actually created what we call a scanning system. So it's a box that literally just runs these different models. So we can, depend on the type of ginger, if it's Queensland variety or jumbo or Canton, you can literally just put the piece of ginger, cut the little face where a human would normally inspect, put it under, and it will give its score and a percent confidence of what it actually feels is diseased or not diseased. This is actually a great little tool then that we can actually use for, particularly for not only just sorting, but also for training sorters, is a first stage of moving to a full automated production system.
Look, to take the guesswork out of that core work on farm, there's obviously been a mighty element of non-guesswork on your behalf to get to this point. Tell me, I guess, the need for the solution has been a long time coming. What sort of feedback have you got on the ground, especially at the Templeton's farm where you've done a lot of this core base work?
Yeah, so the feedback's been absolutely positive at the moment, though, because it's one of these things where in a production environment, things are happening so fast. And if we can get that sort of production throughput at the same quality as the experts, that's fantastic. And you can always be very critical of these systems. When you start to spend maybe 10 seconds per piece of ginger, which is way too long, we have to be at the sub-second, literally you're passing things under this system very fast. You can be a bit more critical, but I think they're incredibly impressed by just how robust this system is. You know, you select the type of ginger that you want, the different models, so we can vary the models. As I said, we try different combinations of how we train these networks. And that's when we actually came up with this idea, and through the help of Kylie Templeton, actually to make it as a training tool. You know, when they've got particularly if they have a sort of a moving labour force through, just to make sure that they have consistency in their grading. So, you know, and obviously we're coming up into seed ginger cutting right now. So that type of tool to help potentially inexperienced or, you know, new people to the industry is a fantastic opportunity for this.
We're discussing essentially the prototype at this stage. There has been, in your initial report around this research, some outcomes that have highlighted the need to further explore around the potential of, I guess, the application to technology to industry, what that looks like, and the need for some commercial pathways. Tell me a bit about that. What were some of the recommendations from this initial piece of research?
The key recommendations from this were the system is as good as what we believe as good as an expert's seed cutter in their detection accuracy. So the next phase is then how do you implement that on a production line? You know, the obvious one is we've made this box. It's a little blue box about the size of, a bit bigger than a shoebox, has a screen on it. And when you put the ginger under, you'll see very quickly, like within a fraction of a second, you'll see what we believe is the, you know, disease, non-disease, as best we can as a compared to a human. And if there is some real doubt, it will put that, and that will might mean it needs a bit more scrutiny. So the next phase will be to actually take this. We learned so much from this project that we can start to do, and the technology that we now feel really confident that we can actually take it to the next phase, where we can actually do pieces were passed through at a production line rate. They can do this automatic sorting. And even to the point now with the cameras and the AI cameras that we're using, we could actually even start to do the automated cutting of the ginger. We're not currently doing that at the moment, but we now feel confident enough with what we've learned and the ability of these systems that we can actually do that at quite high production rates, which is fantastic.
It's such a great outcome for industry, even at this early stage. From your point of view, from the research and scientific AI side of things, what do the different commercialization approaches look like, or what are some of the considerations that you would like to see take place for the betterment of industry?
Yeah, I think there's a few routes you could take here. So obviously with all this technology, we've been primarily focusing on Templeton Ginger at the moment, but it'd be great to get this out to different farms as early stage prototypes. So even just as a training aid for other ginger growers, we think it has potential there. Other potential routes are to team up with, obviously, equipment manufacturers. We see that this could be used as either, you know, pre-sorting or post-analysis or even cutting type conveyor type technologies where it can be part of the production line. So I think there's many routes to the commercialization here. And, you know, this should be for the benefit of the ginger industry. And we're quite happy at the moment through AgriFutures to, you know, just trial these prototypes. But I think once you get into more production, we see that there's other opportunities just in general quality control. The great thing that we're not exploiting at the moment, but we can do, is we can take a photo of every piece of ginger that's been passed under this. So we can actually now increase the training performance over time across different farms and different locations, you know, so it doesn't necessarily have to be in Queensland. We can go to other areas just to make this more robust. So the great thing about deep learning algorithms is they can feed on more and more data to make themselves better. And by having this, then you have early warning systems. I think that's probably a very big key. People that are managing their farms, if you have a way of automatically detecting fusarium using the system, you can then, as it's been passed under, you can build up sort of maps of where potential ground is, because if you're keeping stock control, you know, areas that you might just need to isolate or that type of thing. So there's a lot of different opportunities here. It's really up to, you know, how the Ginger Association really wants to take this technology and commercialize it into on-farm units.
You've moved this from, as I said before, the sea to soil, and we're into, you know, very different crown of thorns starfish research into the agricultural industry. Are there other sectors that you see within ag that could also benefit from either this particular prototype or something similar to it?
Absolutely. And our team here, we actually have quite a big group looking at different other aspects of agriculture, from capsicums through to watermelons and that type of thing. So the great thing is, if there's a definite need and around this type of real-time or faster than real-time, and what I mean by that is, you know, like superhuman type speed of processing information, this technology has real potential. And, you know, not just for disease detection, but for sorting, grading, even as you're driving, it doesn't necessarily have to be in the production shed. For our weeding and some of our crop assessment technologies, it's actually done as the robot's moving through the fields or through the greenhouses and that type of thing. So there's lots of potential for this technology in this space. So where I actually find it quite interesting, this is something that we did with our prototype, is that human factors part. So if you do make it part of a human system, or, you know, a human shared system where you actually have automation with humans side by side, the interfaces are essential. And that's what we spend a bit of time on with our prototype, is just to make it super simple. Like, you just put it under, you get a you'll see the photo of the image, but you also get a grade as you put on it very quickly. There's no wait time. That's key to having this technology accepted by different groups, farmers, warehousing, all sorts of things like that, because if the technology is not usable, it's not trusted, then it's not going to find its way into sort of mainstream use.
I guess that leads me to my final question, Matthew. If we were to have a similar conversation around this technology in 10 years' time, what do you hope you'd be able to tell me?
Well, I know that if you have this conversation in probably 2 or 3 years' time, I would see that you would actually have automated seed cutting. I honestly believe that there is actually now no impediment to like sort of faster than real-time slicing. We already see that in different industries now, whether it be pineapples or other things where we can do automated slicing and things like that. Yeah, I think it's just going to transform the way that we actually do a lot of the general labor-intensive aspects. And what will happen is we can actually then start to scale up to meet the growing demand. Like if you have a labor shortage, as we do at the moment, across nearly the entire agricultural sector, you know, having this technology is essential. I think this has probably been the wake-up call that we need. Mining's gone through this numerous times when you have highs and lows in labor force and price of coal and stuff. Now, in the agricultural sector, we actually have labor deficiency. So how do we keep up production? Production is still going to be required is through the use of technology. So I think 10 years from now, this will be just commonplace. Already, I can guarantee on your phones in 10 years, the amount of AI that you're going to have will be incredible. On farm, probably might even be at tractor level. You have AI and automated crop management as you're moving through the crop. So I think there's incredible potential in the air.
And just to completely conclude this terrific conversation, what did the ginger farmers think of the Ginger Ninja trial? Here's Kylie Templeton again.
You've always got to start somewhere with new technology, and this was the starting point. I think there's a lot more research to be done, but it started that process off. So, of course, I'm not a scientist myself, but if I do speak to the likes of Matthew, who's saying that these algorithms, they're very smart things that keep learning and learning. And the more you show that camera lens of what is good seed and what's bad seed, the more it learns. And it will end up being a lot smarter than us. Initially, we were hoping that the camera lens may have been able to find more detail or might be able to identify the fusarium in the ginger with different colourings that the human eye can't see. So we went along that line, and at this stage the camera lens hasn't been able to do that. But again, as technology gets better or something new comes out, it might be able to happen not that further down the track. So yeah, you have to start somewhere, and I think this was our starting platform for our research and technology to keep moving closer to what we need to achieve.
Do you think it's possible with this sort of technology and additional support that is only going to get stronger as, you know, technology and AI comes into the fore even more, that there would be a time when fusarium isn't an issue for the ginger industry?
I'd love to think so. The technology that's coming out these days is really encouraging. Yeah, I think something will come out of it, definitely not that far down the track.
You've been listening to Agri Futures On Air, a podcast brought to you by Agri Futures Australia. For full access to a huge backlog of stories on Australia's agricultural trends and innovations, research outcomes, inspiring stories from our rural leaders, and insights into new and emerging rural industries, please subscribe to Agri Futures On Air on your favourite podcasting app. You can also find more information at our website, agrifutures.com.au.